Chapter 105. How Mr. Winkle, when he stepped out of the frying pan, walked gently and comfortably into the fire, the ill-starred gentleman who had been the unfortunate cause of the unusual noise and disturbance which alarmed the inhabitants of the Royal Crescent in manner and form already described, after passing a night of great confusion and anxiety, left the roof beneath which his friend still slumbered, bound he knew not whither. The excellent and considerate feelings which prompted Mr. Winkle to take this step can never be too highly appreciated, or too warmly extolled. If, reasoned Mr. Winkle with himself, if this Dowler attempts, as I have no doubt he will, to carry into execution his threat of personal violence against myself, it will be incumbent on me to call him out. He has a wife. That wife is attached to, and dependent on him. Heavens! If I should kill him in the blindness of my wrath, what would be my feelings ever afterwards? This painful consideration operated so powerfully on the feelings of the humane young man, as to cause his knees to knock together, and his countenance to exhibit alarming manifestations of inward emotion. Impelled by such reflections, he grasped his carpet bag, and creeping stealthily downstairs, shut the detestable street door with as little noise as possible, and walked off. Bending his steps towards the Royal Hotel, he found a coach on the point of starting for Bristol, and, thinking Bristol as good a place for his purpose as any other he could go to, he mounted the box, and reached his place of destination in such time as the pair of horses, who went the whole stage and back again, twice a day or more, could be reasonably supposed to arrive there. He took up his quarters at the Bush, and designing to postpone any communication by letter with Mr. Pickwick until it was probable that Mr. Dowler's wrath might have in some degree evaporated, walked forth to view the city, which struck him as being a shade more dirty than any place he had ever seen. Having inspected the docks and shipping, and viewed the cathedral, he inquired his way to Clifton, and being directed thither, took the route which was pointed out to him. But as the pavements of Bristol are not the whitest or cleanest upon earth, so its streets are not altogether the straightest or least intricate. And Mr. Winkle, being greatly puzzled by their manifold windings and twistings, looked about him for a decent shop in which he could apply afresh for counsel and instruction. His eye fell upon a newly painted tenement which had been recently converted into something between a shop and a private house, and which a red lamp, projecting over the fanlight of the street door, would have sufficiently announced as the residence of a medical practitioner, even if the word surgery had not been inscribed in golden characters on a wainscot ground, above the window of what, in times bygone, had been the front parlor. Thinking this an eligible place wherein to make his inquiries, Mr. Winkle stepped into the little shop, where the gilt-labeled drawers and bottles were, and finding nobody there, knocked with a half-crown on the counter, to attract the attention of anybody who might happen to be in the back parlor, which he judged to be the innermost and peculiar sanctum of the establishment. From the repetition of the word surgery on the door painted in white letters this time, by way of taking off the monotony. At the first knock, a sound, as of persons fencing with fire irons, which had until now been very audible, suddenly ceased. At the second, a studious-looking young gentleman in green spectacles, with a very large book in his hand, glided quietly into the shop, and stepping behind the counter, requested to know the visitor's pleasure. "I am sorry to trouble you, sir," said Mr. Winkle, "but will you have the goodness to direct me to roared the studious young gentleman, throwing the large book up into the air, and catching it with great dexterity at the very moment when it threatened to smash to atoms all the bottles on the counter. Here's a start. There was, without doubt, for Mr. Winkle was so very much astonished at the extraordinary behavior of the medical gentleman, that he involuntarily retreated towards the door, and looked very much disturbed at his strange reception. "What, don't you know me?" " said the medical gentleman. Mr. Winkle murmured, in reply, that he had not that pleasure. "Why, then, " said the medical gentleman, "there are hopes for me yet. I may attend half the old women in Bristol, if I've decent luck. Get out, you moldy old villain, get out." With this adjuration, which was addressed to the large book, the medical gentleman kicked the volume with remarkable agility to the farther end of the shop, and, pulling off his green spectacles, grinned the identical grin of Robert Sawyer Esquire, formerly of Guy's Hospital in the borough, with a private residence in Land Street. "You don't mean to say you weren't down upon me?" said Mr. Bob Sawyer, shaking Mr. Winkle's hand with friendly warmth. "Upon my word I was not," replied Mr. Winkle, returning his pressure. "I wonder you didn't see the name," said Bob Sawyer, calling his friend's attention to the outer door, on which, in the same white paint, were traced the words "Sawyer, late Knockemurf." "It never caught my eye," returned Mr. Winkle. "Lord, if I had known who you were, I should have rushed out, and caught you in my arms," said Bob Sawyer, "but upon my life, I thought you were the king's taxes." "No. Said Mr. Winkle. "I did, indeed," responded Bob Sawyer, "and I was just going to say that I wasn't at home, but if you'd leave a message I'd be sure to give it to myself, for he don't know me, no more does the lighting and paving. I think the church rates guesses who I am, and I know the waterworks does, because I drew a tooth of his when I first came down here. But come in, come in." Chattering in this way, Mr. Bob Sawyer pushed Mr. Winkle into the back room, where, amusing himself by boring little circular caverns in the chimney piece with a red-hot poker, sat no less a person than Mr. Benjamin Allen. "Well," said Mr. Winkle, "this is indeed a pleasure I did not expect. What a very nice place you have here." "Pretty well. Pretty well," replied Bob Sawyer. "I passed, soon after that precious party, and my friends came down with the needful for this business. So I put on a black suit of clothes, and a pair of spectacles, and came here to look as solemn as I could." "And a very snug little business you have, no doubt?" said Mr. Winkle knowingly. "Very," replied Bob Sawyer. "So snug, that at the end of a few years you might put all the profits in a wine glass, and cover 'em over with a gooseberry leaf." "You cannot surely mean that?" said Mr. Winkle. "The stock itself, dummies, my dear boy," said Bob Sawyer. "Half the drawers have nothing in 'em, and the other half don't open." "Nonsense." Said Mr. Winkle. "Fact, honor." Returned Bob Sawyer, stepping out into the shop, and demonstrating the veracity of the assertion by divers hard pulls at the little gilt knobs on the counterfeit drawers. "Hardly anything real in the shop but the leeches, and they are second hand." "I shouldn't have thought it." Exclaimed Mr. Winkle, much surprised. "I hope not," replied Bob Sawyer, "elsewhere's the use of appearances, eh? But what will you take? Do as we do? That's right. Ben, my fine fellow, put your hand into the cupboard, and bring out the patent digester." Mr. Benjamin Allen smiled his readiness, and produced from the closet at his elbow a black bottle half full of brandy. "You don't take water, of course?" said Bob Sawyer. "Thank you," replied Mr. Winkle. "It's rather early. I should like to qualify it, if you have no objection." "None in the least, if you can reconcile it to your conscience," replied Bob Sawyer, tossing off, as he spoke, a glass of the liquor with great relish. "Ben, the pipkin." Mr. Benjamin Allen drew forth, From the same hiding place, a small brass pipkin, which Bob Sawyer observed he prided himself upon, particularly because it looked so businesslike. The water in the professional pipkin, having been made to boil, in course of time, by various little shovelfuls of coal, which Mr. Bob Sawyer took out of a practicable window seat, labeled soda water, apostrophe Mr. Winkle adulterated his brandy, and the conversation was becoming general, when it was interrupted by the entrance into the shop of a boy, in a sober gray livery and a gold-laced hat, with a small covered basket under his arm, whom Mr. Bob Sawyer immediately hailed with, "Tom, you vagabond, come here." Apostrophe, the boy presented himself accordingly. "You've been stopping to overhaul the posts in Bristol, you idle young scamp." Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Bob Sawyer. "No, sir, I haven't," apostrophe, replied the boy. "You had better not." Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Bob Sawyer, with a threatening aspect. "Who do you suppose will ever employ a professional man when they see his boy playing at marbles in the gutter or flying the garter in the horse road? Have you no feeling for your profession, you groveler? Did you leave all the medicine?" Apostrophe, "Yes, sir." Apostrophe, the powders for the child, at the large house with the new family, and the pills to be taken four times a day at the ill-tempered old gentleman's with the gouty leg? Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Yes, sir." Apostrophe, then shut the door, and mind the shop. Apostrophe, "Come," apostrophe, said Mr. Winkle, as the boy retired, "things are not quite so bad as you would have me believe either. There is some medicine to be sent out." Apostrophe, Mr. Bob Sawyer peeped into the shop, to see that no stranger was within hearing, and leaning forward to Mr. Winkle, said, in a low tone, "He leaves it all at the wrong houses." Apostrophe, Mr. Winkle looked perplexed, and Bob Sawyer and his friend laughed. "Don't you see?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Bob. "He goes up to a house, rings the area bell, pokes a packet of medicine without a direction into the servant's hand, and walks off. Servant takes it into the dining parlor, master opens it, and reads the label. Draft to be taken at bedtime pills, as before lotion as usual the powder. From Sawyer's, late Knockemurf's. Physician's prescriptions carefully prepared, and all the rest of it. Shows it to his wife, she reads the label, it goes down to the servants, they read the label. Next day, boy calls. Very sorry his mistake, immense business, great many parcels, to deliver Mr. Sawyer's compliments, late Knockemurf. The name gets known, and that's the thing, my boy, in the medical way. Bless your heart, old fellow, it's better than all the advertising in the world. We have got one 4-ounce bottle that's been to half the houses in Bristol, and hasn't done yet." Apostrophe, "Dear me, I see," apostrophe, observed Mr. Winkle, "what an excellent plan." Apostrophe, "Oh, Ben and I have hit upon a dozen such," apostrophe, replied Bob Sawyer, with great glee. "The lamplighter has 18 pence a week, to pull the night bell for 10 minutes every time he comes round, and my boy always rushes into the church just before the psalms, when the people have got nothing to do but look about him, and calls me out, with horror and dismay depicted on his countenance. Bless my soul, everybody says, somebody taken suddenly ill. Sawyer, late Knockemurf, sent for. What a business that young man has." Apostrophe, at the termination of this disclosure of some of the mysteries of medicine, Mr. Bob Sawyer and his friend, Ben Allen, threw themselves back in their respective chairs, and laughed boisterously. When they had enjoyed the joke to their heart's content, the discourse changed to topics in which Mr. Winkle was more immediately interested. "We think we have hinted elsewhere that Mr. Benjamin Allen had a way of becoming sentimental after brandy. The case is not a peculiar one, as we yourself can testify, having, on a few occasions, had to deal with patients who have been afflicted in a similar manner. At this precise period of his existence, Mr. Benjamin Allen had perhaps a greater predisposition to maudlinism than he had ever known before. the cause of which malady was briefly this. He had been staying nearly 3 weeks with Mr. Bob Sawyer. Mr. Bob Sawyer was not remarkable for temperance, nor was Mr. Benjamin Allen for the ownership of a very strong head. The consequence was that, during the whole space of time just mentioned, Mr. Benjamin Allen had been wavering between intoxication partial and intoxication complete. My dear friend, apostrophe said Mr. Ben Allen, taking advantage of Mr. Bob Sawyer's temporary absence behind the counter, whither he had retired to dispense some of the second-hand leeches, previously referred to. My dear friend, I am very miserable. Apostrophe, Mr. Winkle professed his heartfelt regret to hear it, and begged to know whether he could do anything to alleviate the sorrows of the suffering student. Nothing, my dear boy, nothing, apostrophe said Ben. You recollect Arabella, Winkle? My sister Arabella, a little girl, Winkle, with black eyes when we were down at Wardle's? I don't know whether you happened to notice her, a nice little girl, Winkle. Perhaps my features may recall her countenance to your recollection? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Winkle required nothing to recall the charming Arabella to his mind. And it was rather fortunate he did not, for the features of her brother Benjamin would unquestionably have proved but an indifferent refresher to his memory. He answered, with as much calmness as he could assume, that he perfectly remembered the young lady referred to, and sincerely trusted she was in good health. Our friend Bob is a delightful fellow, Winkle, apostrophe was the only reply of Mr. Ben Allen. Very, apostrophe said Mr. Winkle, not much relishing this close connection of the two names. I designed them for each other. They were made for each other, sent into the world for each other, born for each other, Winkle, apostrophe said Mr. Ben Allen, setting down his glass with emphasis. There's a special destiny in the matter, my dear sir. There's only 5 years difference between them, and both their birthdays are in August. Apostrophe, Mr. Winkle was too anxious to hear what was to follow to express much wonderment at this extraordinary coincidence, marvelous as it was. So Mr. Ben Allen, after a tear or two, went on to say that, notwithstanding all his esteem and respect and... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.